So good afternoon, everyone. Jason O'Hagan from WeatherTech. Thanks everyone for joining our Are You Okay live webinar. WeatherTech has always been involved in Are You Okay days, and obviously in the last few years, undoubtedly our well-being and mental health has been tested through a whole heap of challenging environments and uncertainties around the world and in Australia. And we welcome all our guests and customers from Australia, as well as a number of people who's dialed in internationally as well. So welcome to everyone. From a stats point of view, according to the ABS, it's one in five Australians are reporting high or very high levels of psychological distress linked to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so with me today, I've got two NRL legends from different eras of life and walks of life to some degree, Wayne Pearce and Chris Walker. And so welcome, boys.
Thank you.
And even though, us and Chris and Wayne are not fully equipped or qualified to some degree, maybe that's for your understatement in some aspects, to tackle individual issues. The boys will be sharing their own experiences and how they've dealt with their challenges in high-pressure situations and being under spotlight as athletes in the rugby league arena specifically. So quickly, Wayne Pearce, Balmain captain, played rugby league in the 80s and the 90s, captain New South Wales, captain Australia. And is recognised as a hard lock forward and quite a disciplined man when it comes to training. State of origins, coached New South Wales, and has since then been a role as a commissioner in the rugby league, Project Apollo that he'll talk about briefly coming forward, and also runs his own business for many years, Advantage, enabling peak performance with a lot of large corporates around the world. And Chris Walker, in the 2000s, been around for about, 46 clubs, I think Chris went, was it 46?
Yeah, played more clubs than Slim Dusty.
Recognised for his blistering pace, larrikin of the game and a legend within Queensland for a number of clubs. And most recently, he's been motivated and got a Fund My Challenge platform where Chris is pretty passionate about a whole heap of areas that he's raising money. Most recently, he did a walk from Cairns to the Gold Coast, 1,750-odd Ks that he'll talk about briefly, and a lot of other things that he's involved with currently through to raise money for charities and a whole heap of things. So we'll kick off, Junior and Chris. Boys, just quickly tell the crew some of your key career highlights over your life. Wayne, over to you.
Yeah, well, Jace, thank you. Thanks for that introduction. And it's a pleasure to be involved with your telecast here today. Career highlights, funny people talk about career highlights because, whenever I speak at functions or wherever I present at functions and stuff like that, they read off this resume and it's all these successes, right? And but people never get to hear about all the setbacks. And, there's a massive amount of setbacks that really, I suppose, more than anything, probably forged my mindset and allowed me to sort of become the sort of person that I am. But in terms of highlights, playing for Australia for the first time was an amazing feeling. I was on a kangaroo tour over in England in 1982. I went across. In those days, they used to have kangaroo tours that went for like 3 months. And we played 22 matches on tour. There'd be 28 players, so basically two teams. And the teams would sort themselves out into the Kangaroos, which was the test team, and the Emus, which is on the emblem. Yeah. And I went over as a second string lock, but I played pretty well in the first couple of games and got a start in the first test in the second row. Ray Price was a lock. And I ended up playing all the matches on tour, and it was just the most amazing experience. So, I mean, that in terms of playing is probably a highlight. We won State of Origins a whole lot of other highlights. But in terms of lowlights, as I said, the setbacks really define people. And, I had two grand final losses, didn't win a grand final. We lost in 88, 89. And I had a lot of injuries. But for me, the ability to believe in yourself, the ability to understand that life's about ups and downs is really the key to what has enabled me to bounce back from the setbacks over the years. But I wouldn't swap it. Had some pretty serious injuries, but I wouldn't swap it.
And obviously you've moved into being really successful outside of rugby league, Wayne, after we'll talk about in a second. Chrissy, obviously you've had a number of highs and a handful of lows as well.
Yeah, similar to Wayne. I mean, I never had the privilege of playing for my state, but certainly for Queensland, I hold that those six games, I only played six games. I ran into a bit of trouble off the field and never got to play for Queensland again. But again, it's all about learning. It's all about the ups and downs, like Wayne said. If you can adapt and you can find a way to navigate yourself through the downs that you have to learn from and bring yourself back up to be successful, it's a real testament to yourself. And like Wayne said, losing two grand finals. I never got to win a grand final. I played in two losing grand finals in 03 and 04. Those sort of memories, even today, it's 17 years and 18 years on. It's very hard for me to watch those games, but I'm in a state of mind myself personally that if those games do come on, on Fox League. Years ago, I would never been able to sit down and watch them, but because I'm so happy with the way that I'm in and the mental state that I'm in at the moment with what I'm doing, I could sit down and watch those all day. And that's a part of history. I can't take that back. But there were certainly some ups and downs in my career. But I'm still learning. I'm 41 years of age, and I'm still learning how to deal with my ups and downs. And everyone goes through it. It doesn't matter how successful you are. In life, business, being a parent, being a husband, being a daughter, being a son, a wife, whatever it is, we're always learning. And that's one thing that you wake up every day. And I'm learning still today. So,
you growing up with your brothers, Ben and Shane, obviously in the spotlight as teenagers and, the celebrities as young kids, and then the Bronx signed all three of you pretty well, I think, on the back. And your dad, obviously, being a playing for Norths and brothers, being in the spotlight that you've been, how have you managed that and dealt with that? Obviously, most of the times, and there's been some tough times as well.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky. I had, obviously, with Ben and Shane and my dad, you mentioned those three guys. I had Wayne Bennett, who I still speak to today, who's not only a great coach, but a really good mentor for a lot of men. He's been outstanding for me. Junior, we could probably chuck your young fella into this as well. It's the pressures, I think, these days with social media, especially. I know that Junior's young fella, Mitchell, who I'm a fan of and I love watching play. It's a credit to the guys that he's had in his camp as well, because most kids who couldn't deal with the pressures of rugby league, who don't have that inner circle that can keep them focused. Junior, I'm sure that you would have had many of conversations with Mitchell after many of games that he's played and had the same talks that my dad had with me and my brothers and what Wayne Bennett had with me and my brothers as well. So it's about surrounding yourself with a good support crew and it's a good support staff, because those guys that are in your inner circle see the ups and downs. They know your emotions, and if you've got a good support staff that are smart, they can pick your emotions when you're down and pick you back up. And that's a key indicator and a really key thing that I had during my football career, with having the support people that I had with Ben and Shane, and obviously my father.
Yeah, particularly, your two brothers playing together. Junior, you did a Bachelor of, was it Science, I think?
Science.
And how was that? And you studied a bit of psychology as well. Did that help you handle the high-pressure situations and stress while you're playing and then after
rugby? Yeah, a good question, Jason. Yeah, I mean, I lost my dad when I was 14. He died suddenly from a heart attack, and we were a working-class family. And I had ambitions of wanting to play rugby league through my teenage years. And Gough Whitlam came in as prime minister and made it free to go to university. So it was an opportunity for me, because none of my extended family had been to university. And so it was an opportunity for me to go. And when I went to uni, I wanted to go to uni, but I wanted to learn stuff that would help me with my footy. And so the science degree that I did certainly gave me an opportunity to understand a bit more about anatomy, a bit more about psychology, because I studied psych as well. And it certainly did help. One of the things I came to appreciate was, we're our worst enemy. We engage in a lot of destructive self-talk. And as Chris said, unless we pursue a lifelong habit of learning about life and about ourselves and how we can become better, we can get stuck in a bit of a downward spiral. You know, and we don't get taught this at school. You know, like, I mean, we learn all about physical health at school. You know, we learn about diet, exercise, flexibility, all that sort of stuff. And we understand that we have to practice this to be better. If you want to be a really good athlete or a healthier person, you've got to practice and do the exercise regularly. But nobody tells you about how to actually practice to get your mind, mental health better, because you still got to practice that as well. But, you know, so when I studied the psych at university, it gave me a really good awareness around these concepts. And that going into rugby league as a professional, well, was semi-professional back then, but it gave me, I believe it gave me an edge. And my competitive advantage wasn't size, it wasn't skill, it was to being better prepared than anybody else. And so, you know, I've always been quite innovative. So I took a lot of the techniques that I'd learned from university in this case, and I read lots of books and lots of stuff. I tried a whole lot of stuff in the mental health space as well as the physical space as well.
Yeah, really good insight. And you did a role as Commissioner of Rugby League in the Australian Rugby League. And then in 2020, obviously, we're part of the high-profile project Apollo, which is engaged to bring rugby league back on the ground and keep it rolling. Talk us about that, and obviously a pretty full-blown role to help.
Yeah, well, you know, the game was shut down at the end of March. You know, we paused the competition because COVID was accelerating through the community, and the advice that we had from the professor at the time, the COVID advice was that she thought it was unsafe to continue playing. So we actually made the decision as a commission to shut the competition down, but we were going to be bleeding around about $15 million a week in broadcast revenue because the game was shut down. So there was a need to get the game back up and running as soon as possible. So just after we shut the game down, a couple of days later, Peter Volandi's the chairman of the commission, and I'm on the Rugby League Commission. We had a conversation and a phone conversation, and he asked me, would I get together a team and head up the project or the effort to get the game back on track. And then I did. So I never experienced anything like this before in terms of the specific issue of COVID. I didn't have any infectious disease expertise or public health expertise or anything like that, but I knew how to lead a team and I knew how to get the team together. So I said about this project of getting people back, getting the game back up and running. I believe it needed an identity that was powerful because we needed to bond all a whole lot of stakeholders. Mm. So I can remember when watching the Apollo lunar mission, when Apollo 11 landed on the moon. I remember sitting there in class watching this on a black and white television live, and it was just the most amazing experience. And nobody ever thought it could happen. Mm. So I thought, well, that's a great name for the project. So we call the project Apollo. And to cut a long story short, we worked really well as a team. We had great expertise, and Professor Heslop, who was the expert that I found by chance, he was the guy that guided us through this, along with Peter Volandi's. Peter Volandi's experience previously with the equine flu epidemic that hit back in 2008, I think it was. And he had experience with that. So his input as well was fantastic. And being chair, he was a great advocate for what we were seeking to achieve. But we got back pretty much the first sport globally to get back in the middle of the pandemic. And fortunately, that was only part of the exercise. We had to then not only get back and get the competition started, but then we had to navigate the rest of the season, then State of Origin's post-season. Yeah. But we got to that point and it was a successful bench, and it still continues this year, because obviously this year you can see that we've had to relocate up to Queensland, which we did really early on before the Delta virus took hold in New South Wales, because we saw that was coming. Yeah. And anyhow, so it's the game's still on track for a grand final.
Yeah, first weekend meet in Queensland, huh?
Yeah, can I just say for the first time ever.
Can I just say something, Junior, on behalf of every rugby league supporter, Fanatic, mate, we salute you.
Absolutely.
It was unbelievable, mate. It's what
amazing
what
project,
you guys,
Chris.
Mate, you got, I'll tip my hat to you. It's a wonderful effort what you guys did. You took this on and you went, you know what? We'll show that not only AFL or any other sport in Australia, but you led the way for all sports in the world. And it's unbelievable. I still today, I know it's only been 18 months, but I still today just go, you know what? You guys were amazing. It's an absolute credit to you. And
what's amazing, Chris, is the amount of misnomers and mistruths that were floating around at the time. And we had to cut through all that because there was a lot of people condemning us, saying it was ridiculously risky. We're putting the community at risk and all this sort of stuff. But in actual fact, we made all our decisions based on fact and on the advice of our professor, who was also the advisor to the Defence Force. So
where'd you find him, Junior?
He's highly credentialed. And,
where'd you find him?
Well, actually, what happened was we'd actually set the May 28 return date before we had him on board. So we had an infectious disease doctor who was advising us, but she wasn't at the level that we needed to sign off with the government and for a whole host of reasons. We need this somebody with the credentials that this guy had. But so what happened was we came out of this second meeting of Apollo where we announced May 28. We didn't know how we were going to get there because we didn't have a plan because we didn't have the professor. But we figured that the way, looking at the trend of the graph of the COVID infection was starting to come down, if it continued to come down, where would be a possible restart date, given that we had to bring all the players back together. And this is the thing, one of the things that was really interesting. One of the pillars of our restart was that we wanted fairness for all the teams. Now, New Zealand Warriors, they weren't allowed to train over there. Our teams here, if they wanted to, they could still train. But over there, the New Zealand weren't allowing anyone to train, for example. So we had advice from our internal group that look at the workload of players, and they said the players would need 3 weeks of intense training before the competition starts, before that to allow them to be ready for the competition starting. So we had to work back 3 weeks from that, from whenever we were going to restart. We had to work back 3 weeks to get the Warriors over 3 weeks beforehand, so they weren't disadvantaged. Yep. Then we had to look before that. Then we had to look at how can we get all of the checks and measures in place. For example, how could we get approval for them to come into the country? How could we get approval for group quarantine? We were the first organisation in the country to propose group quarantine. Since then, movie production centres, everyone else is doing group quarantine now. But when we put it to the government, we had to argue vigorously that this was safe. Yeah? Because bear in mind, the government hadn't experienced any of this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it was all new ground, wasn't it?
It was totally new ground. And what I call crisis leadership. So crisis leadership is different to crisis management. Everybody talks about crisis management. The crisis management's when you have a situation that when this arises, this is what you do. A fire happens in the building. What happens? The computer system goes down. We have these steps that we follow. But in COVID, it's never been before. So we were leading. We weren't managing. So, it was,
it's the quality of the leadership that displayed as well, and the group of people around it. It's incredible, as Chris mentioned.
Yeah. So getting back to, the professor, you asked how we got the professor. Yeah. So what happened was we walked out of this meeting. I didn't have anybody. And then it was all hyped up in the media the next day. And I was getting all these emails. One of the emails I got was from a special forces soldier by the name of Shane Healy. And he said, I'm a decontamination expert. I think I can help you, blah, blah. And I thought, we needed someone in that space to decontaminate training venues and playing venues and stuff like that. So I thought I'd meet with him, and he lived not far from me. So I met with him that afternoon, gave him a call, met with him. When I met with him, it sounded what he had to offer was great. And he, been three or four tours of Afghanistan and Iraq. And so he was used to, really rough, difficult environments to work in, which this environment was. So And anyhow, but he, when I asked him, was he qualified enough to sign off with the government? He said, no, no, not me. He said, but my boss, who was over in the army with me, he is, and he is the advisor to the Defence Force. So this is Professor Heslop. I said, would he be interested? He said, well, I think he might be, because he's got a bit of a passion for the game. But he said, but unfortunately, he's a South supporter. I said, well, maybe we can overlook that. Anyhow.
But things don't happen by accident, Wayne, do they?
No, that's right. No, no. So I pretty much got onto him straight away, and he was really, really positive about it and really excited about it. So that's how it came about. So
wonderful story.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, since you've retired, you've been involved in the whole of your things, recently you started Fund My Challenge, which is what you're doing now. Can you tell everyone what it's about and what you're doing and what you have done and what you're planning to do, etc.?
Yeah, so Fund My Challenge. Yeah, Fund My Challenge was born. Out of misfortune that happened last year with the fires. We all know the story about Celeste Barber. She's a comedian here in Australia. Takes the piss out of celebrities. She's got a real good following. She decided to start a Fund My page for the victims that lost all their houses. She thought that the money was supposed to go to, and she chose the New South Wales Royal Fire Brigade as her beneficiary of what she was trying to achieve. But in their constitution, they can only spend the money on training, new equipment, new trucks, which is great because if there's the next fire that sweeps through, they're going to be well equipped to fight any fires, because they've got, I think she ended up raising about $53 million to that. But what happened in the aftermath, she thought that the money was going to building, new businesses, helping businesses, new for homes for families who lost their homes. But like I said, in their constitution, it didn't happen. So she got dragged over the coals. Now, I'm good mates with Joel Parkinson, who is also good mates with her. And I got talking to my business partner who we're building apps for at the time. And I thought, well, some of these charities, and there are 58,000 DGR registered charities in Australia. We're a brand new platform to Australia. We vet our charities and we make sure that the money is actually going to what their charitable cause is, or at least 60% of it. And now, I'm not here to talk about the ones that we've vetted that didn't make the 60%, but I'm here to talk about the ones that we did. So what we do is we have charities that are on board that, for their charitable cause, they spend the 60%. And in our constitution, once they agree to be on our platform, they have, like my walk from Cairns to Gold Coast raised $240,000. I did it for four charities. And they have 12 months then to spend that $50,000 or whatever it is on their cause within 12 months. If they can't do it, they go back to our trustees and make sure that they've got a good viable reason why they haven't spent it. Or if they can't spend it, well, then they can hand it back to another charity of the similar charitable cause that they are both trying to achieve. So essentially what we are is a platform that helps charities gain the momentum that they need, the traction that they need, the money that they need, and also to the awareness that all these charities, especially like what we've noticed in the last, we've been up and running for the last 7 months, so it's a reasonably new charity or a new a platform that raises money for the charity. So what we've found is a lot of the charities that we're doing these challenges for, and what we do is we have ambassadors, league players, union players, AFL players, actors, singers, you name it. We've got a vast variety of ambassadors. That if someone does a challenge, like tomorrow I'm doing a challenge for F45 for White Cloud, which is domestic, which is mental health. And I'm going to F45 Bundle, doing a 10 session Friday. So, and we're raising money and using leveraging off ambassadors and getting the causes and the charities out quicker through our ambassadors. So that's basically what I've been working on for the last year and a half. And to be quite honest with you, Wayne, you can probably back me up. I wish I did this when I was 20 years of age. I've got a platform that I can use, and I've got a bunch of mates that I call mates that people get photo with that the yeah. people get photos with and autographs from. So why not use those guys to help mental health, help breast cancer, whatever it is. And yeah. but it was it's you know, I've had a pretty checkered past with my playing career, but I've been in this space now for 18 months, and it's probably the most amazing thing that I've ever experienced.
Chris, I mean, amazing charities you're helping out, what you're doing. Took the walk you did 1,700 k's, wasn't it, thereabouts?
Yeah, a bit over, yep.
Talk about that and how you got through that. And you had your old man with you, didn't you, most of the way, Gary?
Yeah, I had the old boy with me. Yeah. I had Nate Miles come and join me for the first 12 days. I said to him, mate, I'm doing a charity walk from Cairns to Gold Coast. And he said, mate, how long does it take? Because he's a Gordon Vale boy.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, mate, it's going to take me 12 days to walk from Cairns to Townsville. And he said, right, oh, I'm in. And I said, well, you better check with Tess, your missus. And he rang her and I could hear her screaming to her over the phone. And then he hang up and he said, yeah, I'm definitely coming. So I said, mate, you better go home and check that. But, yeah, I had my old boy with me. I'm in a position where if I rang a company, well, then they'd help out as much as I can. So I was lucky enough to have Ford on donate three cars, one in front, two behind for my support staff to keep me safe. And then I had my dad drive the front car. I had Nate Miles' dad drive the second car. And then we had another guy who was a truck driver. So he was on the two ways to the big rigs coming through just to keep us safe. And it's amazing. If someone had said to me 2 years ago, listen, if you walk 30 kilometres per day along a highway, your mental health, and it might sound corny, but your heart and your soul are full of love, I would have laughed at them. But
great message.
After two days of being on the road and experiencing what I experienced, and with this pandemic, at the start of the year was really starting to get to me because it was down my throat. And it's like everyone, every time you turned on a TV, it was right there and you couldn't escape it. And my mental health was going absolute south. My missus was keeping an eye on me because I was so invested in watching the TV to see what was going on because it was so new to me. Like what Wayne experienced with getting the league back up, it was all new. And when something's new, you want to learn as much as you can about it. And unfortunately, like Wayne said before, there was a lot of misinformation about it. And after two or three days of being on the road, not watching the TV, not watching, because I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning on the road at 5:30, 6 o'clock, walking 30 kilometres, which would take 5.5 hours, depends on what speed you were doing. By the time you got back to where you were staying, you'd have recovery. You might have a few beers with the person who owns the pub or the motel or the caravan park you were staying at. So there was no real time to sit in front of the idiot box and see what was going on in the world. So I distanced myself from that. And then also too, when I was coming through these communities, everyone had found out what I was doing. So the conversations that I was having with people was all positive. It was everything that was around me was positive. I couldn't escape the positivity, and there was no negativity that was happening along the walk. So I got to do it. It took me 71 days. We had a couple of days off, which I didn't like. We got into State of Origin. I walked in, did the women's State of Origin at Sunshine Coast. Did the men's State of Origin for game two. And then unfortunately on the Tuesday, I didn't get home back to the Gold Coast. I had about 85 Ks to go and we got shut down for COVID. So luckily it was only for 3 days, and then finished at Broadbeach and raised some awareness and some much needed funds for some organisations like Beyond Blue, Rise Up, which do amazing work with domestic violence. They've rehoused over 1,400 different families through domestic violence. They go in, they're amazing. They're probably one of the best charities that I've ever dealt with. What they do is they find out the demographic of the family. Then what they do is they go to a house in a different state, different town, whatever it is, wherever they're going to be relocated to. To say it's a mother and two boys and a girl, and the kids are teenagers, and they'll find out what they like. And the kids, some of these kids, it's so sad. Some of these kids have 5 minutes to leave the house before the perpetrator comes back to the house. So they've got no time to walk into their closet and pick what clothes they want. you know, what toys they're going to take with them. So these guys set up the house as it's brand new. So these kids have a, you know, a house that they walk in and the walls don't have holes in them from, you know, from their mother or father, whoever it is getting beaten up, them getting beaten up. So, yeah. And then we have the Alcohol and Drug Foundation. They were the beneficiaries on my walk. Alcohol and Drug Foundation have seen a massive increase in you know, alcohol sales online. I think it was up 400% since COVID hit. So, you know, a lot of people aren't dealing with this pandemic. And, yeah, it was a real soul-cleansing pilgrimage that I was on for 71 days. Is, you know, it's crazy what... Yeah, what
pretty powerful stuff, mate. And I guess, you know, so relevant in today and Are You Okay Day as well, and everything you were doing and what you just discussed.
Oh, 100%. It's about starting that conversation. I've been through it. I've had plenty of times. I've had businesses fly, and then I've had businesses fly, fall over. I had an earth moving company as an exit strategy from my rugby league, and the conversation is the most important start.
Yeah, great message. Hey, Wayne, talk to us about how you manage your own well-being during these times, because you're in Sydney and have been in lockdown for a bit now with a lot of other people. What do you do?
I mean, the first thing is, you know, you can't really control on a macro scale what's going on out there. So, and shit happens. So, you know, things happen to you, and it's not about what happens to you, it's how you respond to it. And for me, further to what Chris was talking about, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there, and a lot of that negativity is driven by media, because negative headlines gets more viewers and sells more newspapers. So, you know, it's the world is not as bad as what it's made out to be, but a lot of people get sucked in by that, by the negativity, and understandably the non-conscious brain responds to that and goes on to hyper alert. But I think for me, you know, routine is really important, you know, in lockdown down here, you know, is to have a routine each day, has some goals each day. Exercise is for me, is critical. And one of the good things about the lockdown down here is it's actually taught me to slow down a little bit, to be honest. I didn't realize I was in my 60s and I still...
You're one of the fittest 60-year-olds.
Looking good for 60, you can still play.
Looking good, mate.
No, not quite. But your diet's important as well. You know, it's really about, in my view, it's really about being optimistic. And I think optimism and practicing gratitude, you know, I mean... At the end of the day, you know, where I'm living here in Sydney is a great part of Sydney and it's a great part of the world. So, you know, and I look at what's going on in Afghanistan and places over the world, I'm thinking, gee, wow, you know, we're actually not in a bad place at all. So when you practice gratitude and you also practice optimism, and optimism not being blindly positive, optimism is really about believing that there is a positive outcome and what can I do to affect that outcome. And I also meditate daily as well. Every morning when I get up, I meditate. And I was one that for many, many years thought it was for the weirdos that sat on the side of mountains up in Asia somewhere, right? But when I experienced it in an authentic way, which I did about 15 years ago, I was actually running a workshop for one of my clients, and the client said, "Do you mind if we..." In the middle of a workshop, it was a team building workshop for a company, said, "Can we get this guy in after lunch to do a meditation session?" And when he did come in, he looked a bit like a surfer, came into this session, and I joined in. I thought, wow, that was really, really good. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of simple things you can do, but it's really a way of looking at the world. And I think once you overcome a setback, and this is what I realized at the age of 14 when my dad died suddenly, and I was going to be a telecom technician. That was my job. That was what I was setting my heart on, because my mum wanted me to get a job working for the government. My dad wanted to get a job as a tradie. So this telecom technician gig sound pretty good, you know? And then anyhow, as things evolved, my dad died, and I had a mentor come into my life that sort of gave me the belief that Gough Whitlam made it free to go to uni. You can go to uni, and you know, you can set different goals. So, cut a long story short, you know, that first big setback ultimately taught me that I can be in control of my destiny. And I think that's where resilience comes from. It comes from, you know, you having that initial bit of a support, and Chris talked so much before about support in tough times, having that support to work through a setback, and then you start to believe in yourself, hey, what did I just achieve? And then that gives you more momentum for more setbacks. And life's not a monorail. Life's a roller coaster where you're going to have ups and downs. That's just the nature of life.
There was a thing that you talk about, this EQ and IQ and all that stuff, and there's another one called AQ, adversity quotient, which is about resilience. And, you know, that's one of the key, people say you can be IQ, you're smart, and EQ and emotions, but, you know, the AQ and resilience you talked about is one of the most important things to get through life, Junior, like you were just saying before.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because, as I said, because there's one thing's going to be guaranteed in this world that's incredibly unstable at the moment, and it's going to become more unstable as the world continues to accelerate, is we're going to have setbacks, simple as that. Yeah. You know, and when you get knocked down, you've got two choices. You give up or you get up.
You know, the other thing, you know, you talk about gratitude, you know, it's like appreciation, appreciate the best, appreciate the good.
Yes.
And like you said, you're sitting in your house wherever you are in Sydney and looking out, and there was one guy said to me, he was in Philadelphia, and he told me he's a professor of appreciation inquiry. I don't know how you get that degree. But he's going to have a piece of paper, and he goes, he's sitting at a restaurant having a piece of salmon, and his kid sends him a text and says he loves him. And he said, that's appreciate the good, Jason.
Yeah, fantastic.
Hey, Chris, talk about, with your experience, what tips do you have everyone? How do you support others through these challenges? And you've got, we should talk about, you know, your nephew, Sam, who's now been thrown into the first grade out of nowhere, 18 years old. I mean, you're obviously, and your brothers and everything, a great network for him, but how do you support people through you and the challenges that are around the world?
Oh, for me, family-wise, especially during this pandemic, I've got young kids. My support is always, I grew up in a family where dad and mum would always ask me how I was, always ask how I felt, would always say that they're proud of me and always say that they love me. And if you can, especially with my kids, and I'm only just going through with my kids with the support. If my kids, I ask my kids every single day if they're happy or how their emotions are. Like I say, listen, how are you feeling today? How was school? And I always tell my kids I love them, and I always tell my kids at least once a week that I'm proud of them. Because if you hear that from the person that you look up to, like I used to hear it from my mum and dad all the time, I knew that I was loved. I knew that I'd had that security blanket around me. So that's one way that I support people. And Junior, it was interesting to hear you say about your routine and exercise, because if I don't exercise and I don't get my, if I'm out of routine, my headspace goes to a different level. Like as soon as I'm out of that routine, and what I learned 2 years ago, when I lost my business, I'd lay in bed, and I'd turn to drinking alcohol. I'd turn even drinking more alcohol. I'd drink. Me and my wife would sit at home. We'd drink 3 bottles of red wine. Go to bed at 11 o'clock at night. Wake up at 12 o'clock at night, and I'd sit there and stare at the ceiling about what had just happened to me. And Junior,
that was your way of masking the pain, right?
That was my way. And Junior, you know, you said there's two things you can do. You can lay down, or you can get up and go again. And I had 3 years to reflect, because that's where how long I had to wait. And I was laid in bed most nights, and I'm talking probably maybe 4 or 5 nights per week where I'd wake up. I'd think, I need to go to sleep. I need to drink more wine, because that'll put me to sleep. And I'll wake up at 6 o'clock and I'll feel refreshed and I'll feel ready to go, and I'll take on the world and I'll start again. But what that was doing, that was masking so much of my anxiety, that I'd wake up at 12 o'clock and I'd lay and I'd watch and I'd look at the ceiling until the sun came up. And that was most days. And I thought to myself, I can't keep on doing this. I've got to change my mindset. I've got to teach myself, go back to the basics of teaching myself the really simple task of making myself go to sleep and without having alcohol to do it. And I got into a position where I went, righto, I read somewhere, it wasn't the 5 o'clock, it wasn't the 5 a.m. club, it was, or 5:30 a.m. club, or whatever it is. I thought to myself, if I'm going to wake up at 12 o'clock, why not try and wake up at 5 o'clock? And instead of waking up at 7 o'clock, I'd wake up at 5 o'clock. I'd have 45 minutes to myself. where it was pitch black. No one was awake in my house. And it was sort of my time. That was 45 minutes of my time just reflecting on myself and whatnot. Then I'd wake up, then I'd get myself out of bed at 5:45. I'd go down to the beach because I only lived just down the road from the beach. I'd go down the beach. I'd go for a 45-minute walk every morning. And then I'd pick up 2 coffees, one for my wife and one for me. And then I'd start my day. And that was my productivity. That was my 2 hours of productivity every day, which equates to, I think, 30 days per year that I got to be productive on myself. And yeah. And that was that moment where I had that light bulb moment to then change myself. Junior, you're so right. If you can get yourself into a routine where you wake up, and the routine could be meditation. And I've tried meditation, Junior, and I've got that head that just keeps on going, and it's really hard for me to switch off. But I will say this, I did it. The CEO here at Fund My Challenge, Theodore Varaktaris, yeah, he's a very, very, very successful businessman, and his wife owns a yoga studio. They do meditation, and he was telling me about it. I did it for 5 days, and I walked into my room, and I shut the house down, walked into my room, shut the door, turned the light off, and I laid on the ground, and I concentrated on my breathing for probably about 10, 15 minutes. And it was amazing what it did for my head. I taught myself, and it was only for 5 days. And I haven't got back into it. I know that I haven't. I know that I've spoke to my wife about it. But it's amazing, just that 10 to 15 minutes where you concentrate on your breathing, how much of a state of relaxation you get into. And the routine, the exercise is paramount to get yourself out of a pretty sticky situation within what goes on up inside your head.
The other thing, Chris, listening to what your story is, and I absolutely get it, is that when your business folded, what effectively folded was a part of you, right? Okay, and what people are really anchored in terms of satisfied in life is when they have a purpose.
Yeah. Yep.
So this purpose evaporated, and now you've found another purpose, right?
Yep.
In terms of the support you're doing for charities and stuff like that. And I think you talked earlier about, you know, life's about learning. And I think life is and particularly if you're in a leadership role, and any parent that's watching this telecast is in a leadership role. Yeah. So don't just think it's because you're not running a business. And when you lose sight or lose connection to a purpose, that's when people become disengaged, and that's when they're more vulnerable. But when you're purposeful, then and we have changed and we evolve through life. So our purpose needs to shift from time to time as well.
Yeah.
And I'm really big on people understanding and connecting what their purpose is, because that is one of the fundamentals that underpin resilience without a doubt. And you talk to that yourself.
Oh yeah, and that you've got to be resilient. That's the thing. Like what you said when you said you can either do two things. That is being resilient. You can either lay down or you can be resilient, and you go, like my pride took a massive hit. Like that was a big thing that was for me when everything went to the wall. That was the biggest thing for me, is letting people down, and then my pride. Like that I couldn't handle that, but it had been done. So I couldn't sit there and go and cry over spilt milk and then feel sorry for myself. Being a professional rugby league player or being a rugby league player, it teaches you so much. Like it teaches you so much, and it's like a loss. I took that as a loss, but you know what? There's always next week. It's like a football game that you can have your losses, you can have your grand final losses, but guess what? You can wake up, the sun's shining, the birds are chirping, there's fresh air to be breathed in. You know, you can't. You know,
that's the gratitude thing. That's the gratitude factor.
The gratitude thing. The gratitude thing is, like, we've got in our organization, we have our pillars, our monthly pillars, love, gratitude, you know, all that sort of stuff. So that month, gratitude should be all year round, but we have months for our pillars, for our 12 pillars. So having those 12 pillars it navigates your way through.
Yeah, amazing, interesting insight, boys. There's a note, a little question come through, and it's a mate of all three of us, and Chris and I see him every now and again. it's got to Junior. Junior, who's the best red-headed lock forward you've played against?
I'm guessing that's come from Fatty, has it?
Well, mate, he wasn't too sure. He said, Fatty said, I hope not. He said, I hope
he picks me. Without a doubt. Fatty Vorton by a mile.
Oh, by a mile.
Thank God you said that. He said, let me know what he says, Jason. Boys, thanks for joining us. You know, we could talk for hours. A really insightful conversation. Is there anything else, boys, you want to share before we head off and summarise and anything, Junior, with Chris?
We talked a bit earlier about teamwork and you know, what people can do to support each other. And Chris has talked about, and rightly so, about supporting each other with conversations. But the thing is that people, if people feel safe, then they are in a position to listen. Yeah. And so it's really important to talk the language of the person you're speaking to. You know, not everybody wants a hug. Some people want to be challenged and acknowledged for their ability to take a challenge. Some people need their own space, but as long as they know we're there for them and we want to support them, depending on the type of person that they are. And there's no excuses now for not supporting people in face-to-face engagement, which is better than on the phone as well. And that's what we're doing here. We're doing Zoom here. Like, I mean, I think the pandemic has taught us all that we can engage with people in a much more intimate manner on a face-to-face call than we can just on a telephone call or an email. So, yeah, I think it's important to understand what the triggers of those people are. If you know the person pretty well, you'll know whether they like a cuddle, whether they like a rev up chat, whether they like it to be challenged, whatever. I think it's important to talk their language.
Grizzy?
Yeah, definitely, mate. First of all, Jace, thanks very much for having us on, mate. Really appreciate it. To all everyone out there listening, thank you very much. Awesome. Wayne, I could sit there and listen to you all day, mate.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Thank you very much, mate.
It was hard to get him off something.
I didn't know what to expect, like, Chris, because I haven't seen you for years, mate. And mate, you're a credit to yourself, credit to your family. And Jason, thank you for having me on as well.
You're welcome, mate. I appreciate both of you boys, you know, taking an hour out of your days. And well, Chris, what you're doing, you know, the Walker family is an amazing family, mate, every one of them. And Wayne, you're insightful in your leadership. Amazing what you've done with Apollo and everything else you do. Guys, that's it for today. WaynePierce.com.au, fundmychallenge.com for Chris. And obviously for more information and making sure you're in the right headspace and asking the question that the boys were talking about, you know, having Are You OK website. Well, don't suffer in silence. Make sure you get out and talk to people. So on behalf of WeatherTex, thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, boys.
Thank you.